Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to another episode of the Bird Gang. I'm Kyle Lutz with my co-host Mark Milano, and we're pleased to be joined again by our frequent guest, Ryan Waterman. Thanks for coming on the show again, Ryan.
Thanks for having me on again.
All right, so we'll get into some hockey. Flyers play Winnipeg tonight at home. They're in the middle of a pretty big home streak. They have a bunch of home games. And after obviously they started back up after the All-Star game last week, and they play pretty well tonight. The Jets are pretty decent, but they really have to have a big second half. Mark, I think you said there's a chance they could make a run. Ryan and me, I think we're more so hoping that they could tank. I think we all would hope for a high draft pick, but I guess I think personally that they don't have it in them to make the playoffs this year. They're coming into tonight's game. There were 10 points in 49 games behind the second wild card team, and they're chasing a bunch of teams in the Metropolitan Division. Ryan and Mark, I'll start with you. What are the chances they make the playoffs this year? Do you see over 50%?
I surprisingly do see over 50%, just because I've seen the years past where they haven't been in a position like this where they've been that far out. They seem to play well and catch fire towards the end of the season. Just with the only go out of Philadelphia Chiefs, though. And I think that they're going to catch fire, and I think their offense is going to start clicking more. I don't see their defense improving that much better, but I just I see them all around, you know, going on a run and making playoffs with the AG.
But you think they'll be able to make a run despite way below average defense?
Yeah, I do.
Well, speaking of that, they're off to a good start towards making the playoffs. They've won three straight, including tonight's win. They won 5-2 tonight. They won this past Tuesday versus Arizona 4-3 in the shootout. And then prior to the All-Star break, they won versus the rival Penguins 3-2 in overtime, which was a fantastic game. Me and Mark, we wanted to watch it, but we saw bits and pieces of it, and there were a ton of fights. There was a ton of hatred. I think that's the best rivalry in hockey, but we'll get to that in a minute. So, Ryan, I'll get to you, your opinion on this. What do you, from a percentage standpoint, from a chance standpoint, what do you see the chances of us making the playoffs this year?
Realistically, I got to give it less than 50%. Their main chance right now is for Mason to catch fire and lead them to the playoffs. I don't think they can really do it without extremely solid goaltending. I mean, they're in the bottom half in goals per game and goals allowed per game, and they're like almost dead last in penalty kills, so that's working against them big time. The only real shot they have is that Mason can catch fire and go on a streak similar to what Brizgalov did a couple years ago when he had that shutout streak going.
Yeah, and you were saying to me earlier, which I misconstrued at first, you said that I think prior to tonight, if the draft started today, they would have the 7th overall pick. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so that's not bad.
No, not at all.
If everything pans out and if the season ended today, that's
still
a pretty
good draft lottery, if the draft lottery worked out the way that they have it projected right now.
Okay, I actually don't like the draft lottery. I know Mark doesn't like it either. I wish they just went off the worst record in the league. I know that they try to do that in the sports that employ the draft lottery in order to give teams that don't tank a chance to get the number one overall pick. But I still go back to when the Flyers should have got Patrick Kane in the 07 draft instead of JVR. That probably would have drastically altered the 2010 finals, but I don't want to go back in history. But I just thought I'd bring that up. But They have a pretty decent schedule coming up in terms of competition. Saturday night they play at home versus Toronto. Toronto's about where we are. They're under 500 team, one game under. And then they have actually a 6-day layoff. The next week they play at home versus the Islanders, who are really good this year, at Washington, who's been good this year, especially hot as of late, at Montreal, who's I think pretty competitive, and at Columbus before playing Buffalo, who's atrocious. And at Columbus, me and Ryan were talking about this earlier, they don't have to face former Flyer Sergei Bobrovsky in net because he's out 4 to 6 weeks with the groin injury. So that should be pretty interesting. When it comes to the playoffs, they're 10 points out of Washington, who's third in the Metropolitan. Rangers are ahead of the Flyers in the wild card standings. And we'll see what happens. Rangers are actually the second wild card team. Boston's the first. And Flyers are also trailing Florida for the last spot. Florida's 6 points behind the Rangers for the last spot. So it should be a good second half. Continuing with the Flyers, what did you guys think of the Rob Zett move? He was demoted to the Phantoms, and Ray Emery, once Mason came back from his injury and Emery became the backup again. Personally, I know it was a small sample size, but I really like Rob Zett. I think, Mark, you liked him too, but I'll start with you, Mark. What did you think of the move to send down Zepp and not send down Emery?
Well, as a fan standpoint, I don't really like the move because, you know, Zepp's got a hotter hand. He's playing well. I think he's only lost one game this year so far in the four or five games he started. But from a business and management point, I can see where they're coming from. Reason being is the salary difference between Zepp and Emery. They're paying Emery a whole lot more money than Zepp is right now. They don't want to be seen being used in the minor leagues.
Yeah, I agree. He was a very low cap hit. He's actually, for his age, he actually looked really good. I don't like, take away Zepp for a second. Even with Mason as our backup, Emery, excuse me, I don't like his lateral movement. I just think he's a slow guy. His puck handling is okay. He doesn't do enough to overcome that. But Ryan, what do you think of the move to send back down Zepp?
Like Mark said, from a fan standpoint, I don't agree with the move. But definitely from a business standpoint, I can see why they did it with the big difference in the cap hit. The one thing that worries me about this move is it going to affect Zepp's confidence any? I mean, I think he thought he played well enough to at least earn a shot at a backup spot on the main roster, despite the cap difference. So I wonder how that's going to play in to his confidence going back down to the AHL.
That's actually a really good point. I didn't even think about that. Mason, I think, is a good starter. He's not a guy that's going to be a franchise player, but I think he's a guy that is a good player. If I had to, me and Ryan, we were actually talking about this earlier. I think we all did at some point. If I was Hextall and I had to redo this team without considering the cap, let's just put it that way, since our cap, thanks to Holmgren, is all screwed up, I would keep G, Voracek, probably Simmons. I still would keep Couturier and Reed. I know they've been really bad this year, although Reed's been injured, I believe, and probably Mason, who I would keep. But, by the way, Zepp just turned 33, so, and I think he set a record or tied a record for first win over 30. Anyways, tonight the Flyers, like I said, they won 5-2 over Edmonton. They had 25 shots through two periods. They were outshot 38-32. Three players for the Flyers had multiple point games. Van de Velde, Wayne Simmons, actually was a power play goal, and Simmons actually is tied now for third in power play goals in the league this year. Nick Schultz, who got his first, I believe, ever, at least this year, and Braden Schenn, as well as Sean Couturier with the empty net goal, got all the goals. So pretty solid all-around game. It'll be interesting to see what they can do, however, versus a really good team like the Islanders. Pittsburgh's a good team, but they always play them well. So the Islanders, Washington again, those types of teams, even the Rangers and Boston, since they can't seem to beat any of those teams for whatever reason. But we'll see what happens. Speaking of Flyers news, Scott Laughton, who was injured, I believe, last week prior to the All-Star break, had an upper body injury believed to be a concussion. He skated today for the first time, and according to GM Ron Hextall, he said Laughton took a real turn on Tuesday, and things are looking up for him. We're going to take our time with him, and he's been sidelined for the past 2 weeks since January 14th with a suspected concussion, like I said. And also, Hextall says about Teeminen that there could be definitive news regarding him in the coming days. he still might return before the end of the season. The Flyers are a long shot to make the playoffs. This is quarter Roto World. Don't quote me on that. However, Kim and him returning would at least give him the opportunity to retire on a positive note. Actually, me and Mark were talking about that yesterday. In that case, it was Kobe Bryant, since he got injured. I always like to see whether, especially with good players, I always like to see them retire on their own terms. So what do you both think in terms of teaming in? Does he play this year, or does he retire after this year? Mark, I'll start with you.
I think he retires after this year.
You see him playing this year or just retiring on an injury?
I see retiring on an injury. It's a serious injury, above class, nothing to play around with. And I think he's, you know, realizes the spot the Flyers are in, where, and plus his age. So I think he's going to retire without playing another game.
I could see that happening. He's a pretty old player. In March, he'll turn 40. His cap is $2 million. So he doesn't cost a whole lot. He's a great defenseman when healthy, but that's the problem. Like you said, it's a serious injury. So we'll see how it plays out. I don't think Hextall is going to rush him. I just think he's probably has some positive news, or at least something that could probably change the tide in terms of his injury. It seemed like he thought it could be a good thing. Ryan, what do you think?
I think he's going to retire this year. I don't think he's going to play another game. Like Mark said, it's a really serious injury. I think it's too serious of an injury for him to risk. So I think he's just going to cut his losses and just retire without doing any kind of further damage.
Yeah, and I can see him. I don't know about you guys, but I could see him, say he retires this year or next, whatever year he retires, I could see him very well joining the Flyers in a management type position, like whether it be a scout or an assistant to Hextall, kind of like Brodeur is going to be for Lou Lamoriello in New Jersey. Lamoriello said he's going to Brodeur is going to first join the Blues in their front office. I think me and Mark talked about that a day ago, and then it was confirmed that down the line Brodeur would rejoin the Devils. So I could see that happening with Timonen. So should be pretty interesting as far as the playoff hunt in terms of injuries. Hopefully Kimo can return, but only if he's 100% healthy. We don't want him to rush that. A couple more Flyers news before we shift to football and the Super Bowl. Shane Gostisbehere, a.k.a. Ghost, the highly touted Flyers prospect and Phantoms defenseman, he should be back sometime in February. He just, a couple of days ago, underwent surgery for a torn ACL. Actually, no, it was a torn ACL injury that the surgery happened in November, not this month. And prior to that, he made his NHL debut in October. He was limited in his action prior to his surgery. So that's pretty interesting. So I don't see him playing this year anyway, but that's of note. And Nicholas Grossman, a defenseman for the Flyers, was out for tonight's game, but he should be back for Saturday night's game and onward. So we'll see what happens. So shifting to football a little bit, should be a really good game this weekend. Seattle obviously being the defending champs. New England hasn't won a Super Bowl since they last beat us, actually 10 years ago, like a week ago or so, or a couple of days ago. It was the 10-year anniversary. It seems so long ago. New England's actually, at the moment, the favorites by 1 point. And the over-under, actually, it was 48. Now it's 47.5. Should be a really good game. I have Seattle winning, and I'm going to – it's tough because I had the under on this. I could see it being right around even, but I'm going to say – I'm going to pick the underdog, and I'm going to say – I'm going to go with the under on this one. Mark, what do you think is going to happen, not just from a favorite standpoint, but in terms of what player is going to stick out to you, and what do you think is going to happen in the game?
Well, I think it's going to be a 21-17 Seattle win. I see it being way under, simply for the fact that Seattle's defense is legendary. They're great. I think they're going to hold New England to under 20 points. And the key matchup is going to be the Seattle secondary versus New England's receivers, see if New England's receivers can get open. And also, another key point is the secondary of New England versus the Seattle receivers. Because they got Browner and Revis and McCourty and Chung as their secondary. And I think it's a pretty solid secondary. And Seattle is, I think, last in passing offense in the league, which is the reason why I think that
Seattle won't score any points either. But I think it's going to be a back-and-forth game. I just think the defense is going to overcome the winning game.
Yeah, I agree with you there. New England didn't exactly have the best rushing defense, too. They allowed over 100 yards rushing per game. I think Lynch could have a good game. And there's actually pretty interesting news this week where he actually did a press conference. Me and Mark have been watching that the last couple of days. Before we get to the Lynch talk and the Lynch news, Ryan, I want to get your opinion on this. One, with the score and the point spread, and two, like I asked Mark, what do you see happening in the game from a player standpoint? Who do you think will stand out, and what are the comparisons or the matchups that will stand out to you?
I'm going to agree with Mark and go way under. I'm going to say Seattle wins 17-13. Like Mark said, their defense is legendary. I personally think they're the second-best defense to ever play next to the 85 Chicago Bears. As for standout players, I'd have to say that the game's pretty much going to come down to the battle of the corners between Richard Sherman and Darrelle Revis. It's been a big thing over the past couple weeks, who's the better cornerback in the league, and they're figuring it'll be settled Sunday. So one storyline to watch, though, going in, I'm not sure if you know, is Sherman could actually miss the game Sunday because his girlfriend is pregnant and could go into labor anytime within the next 5 days.
I imagine that. I think he had an injury, too, didn't he? Because I read that. I didn't read about the first part, but I believe he had an injury, too. And I could see him playing if it was an injury because a lot of guys play with that, especially the Super Bowl. But if his wife or girlfriend, I can't remember what he said, goes into labor, wow, that would change things dramatically, at least in my opinion. I hope, obviously, you know, it's great to experience, you know, the birth of your child, but I hope as a fan of the Seahawks, at least in this game, I would hope that he doesn't miss the game. So we'll see what happens there. So that's interesting that you picked New England to only score 13 points, Ryan. You don't see Brady having a good game. You don't see Amendola, Edelman, and Gronk having a good game?
No, not at all. I think Seattle's going to get some serious pressure up front, which is going to disrupt Brady's timing. And I think that for all intents and purposes, they're going to make Gronk disappear. They're going to blanket him with double and triple coverage all day. And, I mean, while New England's wide receivers, they're talented, I just think Seattle's secondary is too talented for them to handle. So I think that Seattle's going to hold them pretty in check, similar to how they did Denver last year.
Yeah, I agree. And you mentioned the stats from defense. I'm looking at it, it's mind-blowing. Like I said, they were first in fewest passing yards allowed. They allowed only 185.6 passing yards a game. That's just in a league where guys are throwing 40 touchdowns a year, Stafford, Rodgers, Breeze, Manning, and Brady. That's just mind-boggling and impressive to me. And they were great versus the run, too. They were the third best team in terms of fewest rushing yards allowed per game at just under 82. And they were first in rushing yards on offense with 172. I mean, you combine Lynch and Russell Wilson, that's just a dynamic attack that when Wilson gets out of the pocket, pretty much can't be stopped. Although Wilson had an atrocious, perhaps the worst game of his career last week, by the time the game starts, it'll be 2 weeks ago versus Green Bay. I see him bouncing back. And although he was only 27th in passing yards in terms of rankings this year, I see him having a good game. I'm not sold on New England's defense yet. I was talking to a guy, actually, when I was out with Mark last week. We were talking some football, and they have a good defense, but I don't think they're, like, top five in the league. I would say they're one of the better defense in New England, but anyways, getting back to Seattle's defense, I don't know if you guys agree, but in terms of the last 20 years, I would say Seattle's one of three best defenses, like not just really good, but just one of the best all time. And the three best defenses out of the last 20 years I see are the current Seahawks, the 02 Tampa Bay Bucks, and the 2000-2001 Baltimore Ravens. Would you guys agree with that?
Absolutely.
I would have to rate the 85 Bears defense third, the 2000 Ravens defense second, and the Seattle defense first. I've never seen anything like this defense, how physical they play. They can take any single offensive threat out of the game.
Yeah, I would say all time I would agree with that. So I'm assuming you agree that in the last two decades they're one of the best too, since I think we all can agree, not only recently but all time, they set a huge mark, especially if they win the Super Bowl now, they just won't be a one-time Super Bowl winner, assuming they don't win again. I see them winning, including this game, a couple more Super Bowls with their current group of players, assuming they don't really allow a lot of guys to go. The only real player they allowed to go was Tate, and pretty much everybody on defense still there. I mean, they might lose Maxwell, hopefully, to the Eagles this offseason, but Sherman, Chancellor, Thomas, some of their guys on the D-line, I see them staying. I see them winning. I think we all do. So that should be a really good game. It should be pretty interesting on top of that with Deflategate. So I don't know. I'm kind of surprised still that New England's a favorite. But leading up to that, what did you guys think going past the stats and from a news standpoint? Mark, I'll start with you. I think I know what you're going to say, but what did you both think with the Marshawn Lynch press conference?
I think it's actually very funny. It's very comical. I saw the one today where he kind of barked back at the reporters. But I kind of agree with what he says, how he doesn't really have to, you know, tell them anything or please them. The only thing he's got to please is his teammates and his family. And I like that. I like that he's focused for his team this week on the Buffalo weekend, which I like too. He's prepared, and you know, I don't want to let the media, you know, shove down cameras down his throat and microphones down his throat. I don't know. If I was a player, I wouldn't like that too much either.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I've always said this myself, that the media, although, you know, we're all writers, then, you know, we never know what if we could end up being a part of it, you know, a writer down the line, but I've always agreed that the media, a lot of the guys, they're just controversial, disrespectful guys. They pry too much. They say things. Sometimes they pull things out of their asses. And a lot of times they just stir up controversy that's not, excuse me, that's not there. So with that being said, Ryan, what do you think on the did you get a chance to see the Lynch press conference? And if so, what did you think of it?
Yeah, I did. I loved it, to be honest. I think that it was probably the funniest thing that I've seen at any Super Bowl media day over the past, like, 5 years. I do agree with him. He's been saying for the past, like, 2 years that players shouldn't be required to speak to the media, and I do agree with that. They shouldn't be required to speak to the media because the media pretty much just, like, forces their way in on things and force questions and are able to twist words and opinions to where it makes the player look bad. So I just don't think they should have to be required to speak to the media.
Yeah, I agree with you both. It's not something that, you know, it's not like they put that in your contract, you know, have to speak to the media. And a lot of times, you know, these guys are on Twitter, they're on social media. You can kind of understand what they're saying. A lot of times they joke and it's in jest, but if you know, it's one thing if it's one or two interviews, but sometimes, you know, they're doing so many interviews. I mean, say it's for the Seahawks. You're doing an interview for the Seahawks website, for ESPN, for Sports Illustrated, you know, for Yahoo, et cetera. I mean, there's so many outlets out there. You can't – there's too many interviews. You can't have enough. You can't please everybody, too. So I think we all can agree that although it was pretty funny, it was also a good point that – you know, he shouldn't have to talk to the media. They're controversial, and if he doesn't want to, you know, I don't see a problem with not wanting to. Anyways, getting to some news leading up to the Super Bowl. I'll first start with Seattle. Right tackle for the Seahawks, Justin Britt, is practicing in full for the game. He had a knee injury, and he sat out the NFC Championship game versus Green Bay, but Coach Pete Carroll said it was just a precautionary game. He was a second-round rookie. Also, this isn't in terms of the Super Bowl, but ESPN's Mike Triplett suggests that the Saints could be interested in signing a free agent, as I just talked about, cornerback Byron Maxwell, who I think is on the Eagles. I think they're targeting him as well. And actually, like you said, Ryan, Sherman's girlfriend's, you know, about to deliver their first child any day now. And also, like I mentioned, Sherman had an injury. It's actually a torn ligament in his elbow. So it's a more serious injury than he's letting on. But I think he'll play, assuming his girlfriend doesn't go into birth the same day. Also, Seahawks defensive tackle Brandon Mebane expects to be a full go by April. Also, a couple other things. They're just going to penalize Marshawn Lynch 15 yards. The NFL is, if he makes an obscene gesture during the Super Bowl. What did you guys think of that? I think sometimes they make Lynch out to be a guy they like to target. You know, he's a scapegoat, I guess is the best word to call it. Would you agree with that, Ryan, or do you just think it's something that they have to look into, the NFL? I mean, a lot of times the NFL, they're kind of ass backwards. I mean, I think they mishandled the Ray Rice thing, but yet there's silly things like this that, you know, just let them have fun. I mean, it's one thing if it's really controversial, but if it's like, you know, a touchdown dance or wearing a hat at a press conference, I think it's a little ridiculous. Do you think they're trying to make an example out of Lynch, Ryan?
Yeah, I definitely do. Anymore, the NFL has really become the no-fun league. I mean, you're not allowed to have any kind of fun. They banned Jimmy Graham from dunking the ball through the goalpost of the touchdown celebration. They're targeting Lynch for his, as they put it, obscene gesture after some touchdown dances. I just really don't like the way the NFL is going. They really need to just get rid of Goodell. Goodell is just horrible, and he's proved that with all the crap that he's been dealing with this year. I mean, the Ray Rice thing was ass backwards. That was rectified, but not before it totally trashed his image. You got the Adrian Peterson thing going on, and I mean, Ray Rice, nobody wants to touch Ray Rice now because he abused his girlfriend. But yet, there's half a dozen teams out there that are interested in Adrian Peterson, who's an admitted child abuser. I mean, what's wrong with that theory there? And then you got Greg Hardy, who I don't know what exactly Greg Hardy did, but I know he was caught with like 30-some-odd guns. So, I mean, that's a no-no. Oh, really? Oh, well, yeah, that's a big no-no he's then.
He might see some jail time.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Actually, speaking of controversy, I heard, although I didn't see it yesterday, that the Aaron Hernandez trial was on yesterday. I still can't believe sometimes people want to watch this. But getting back to Maxwell, now that we talked a little bit about the stats and some of the other news, the Saints are, like I said, the Saints are interested in him, and they probably will target him along with the Eagles and a couple other teams. But somebody said, actually, the same guy I quoted, ESPN's Mike Triplett, they said that the Saints don't have very much cap room, and I'm assuming Maxwell, being probably the best corners on the free agent market, will want, you know, a pretty big deal. I mean, not a huge deal, but better than average. I think the Eagles should pursue him. Anything's better than what we have at the moment, especially Fletcher, and I'm still not sold on Kerry Williams either, although some people like him. I think they should do away with both of them, but I think we all can agree that Fletcher's the worst and needs to be gone by next year. What do you see happen with Maxwell, Ryan?
Ultimately, I do think he ends up leaving Seattle. My bias is coming in a little to play here. I do think he signs with the Eagles. I think Chip Kelly took notice during the season and took notice to the fan reactions about Fletcher and Williams. It's really sad, too, because Bradley Fletcher gave pretty much – he gave everything he had. It just wasn't good enough. He's just not a good enough player to be a starting defensive back in the NFL. Kerry Williams has the he has the passion. He has the fire. He doesn't have the common sense. He doesn't have the ability. He lets his passion and his fire get the best of him. So I think Kelly took notice of that. I think ultimately he will go out and get Maxwell because the Eagles will have a good amount of cap space. Actually, they can have, if they restructure some deals and release some players, they can have up to $40 million in cap space. So I think they could go on a bit of a free agent spending spree this year.
It'd be interesting to see what happens with that, along with LeSean McCoy, who I'll get into it in a second. And before I get your opinion on this, Mark, one thing about Maxwell, since we're talking contracts, this past year, his cap hit was only just over $670,000. So he, in the 4 years he's been in the league since being drafted in a sixth-round pick, 173 in the 2011 draft, he hasn't made $1 million or more, or even more than $700,000, which is kind of amazing to me. I know he was a low draft pick, but what do you think of Maxwell and his destination, Mark? Do you see him going here? Do you see the Saints, or do you see him going with Seattle or elsewhere?
I think Seattle's going to try really hard to re-sign him just because they want to keep that Legion and Boom intact. But Ryan said, my bias fans coming out saying the Eagles will land him. And I think the Eagles will also draft Trey Waynes in the draft, too. So they're going to get rid of Bradley Fletcher and Kerry Williams and substitute him with Maxwell and Waynes. I think they keep Nate Allen as well. I actually am one of the few guys that actually like Nate Allen. He's actually one of the few guys in our secondary that can actually catch the ball when it's thrown to him, which I think is big, you know, causing turnovers. And I don't think he was the true problem this year. I just think our cornerbacks are weak.
Yeah, I agree there. I actually like Allen, and obviously he wasn't a problem. He was, in terms of placing the blame, he was way inferior to Fletcher and, you know, maybe even Williams a bit, but obviously there's more of a spotlight on that. But speaking of the draft, we were just talking about that, and you said, Mark, that you were just predicting what the Eagles would draft. Do either of you two or both of you, do you see the Eagles drafting Mariota, and does that mean that they'll trade up, or do you think Mariota will still be there at 20? Ryan, I'll start with you.
I definitely think they trade up for Mariota. Mariota's made it perfectly known that he wants to play for Chip Kelly. Kelly's hasn't been as open about it as Mariota, but he's made it known that he wants Mariota. And to be honest, I don't think either of them can make it in the NFL without each other. I think they were born and bred for each other. Mariota will only fit into Kelly's system, and Kelly's system only fits Mariota. And that's been proven. I just think it's a perfect match, and I think no matter how much the fans may dislike it, I think Kelly's going to do whatever he has to get up and get him.
Yeah. If it means getting rid of Foles, I'm not for it. I like Mariota. He's great for this system, but I think I've made this pretty clear and adamant to both of you, especially recently, that I really like Foles. Although he had a decent year this year, even though he was 6-2, you know, I still think his 2013 season vastly overshadows what he did this year. Plus, a lot of people, at least from what I saw, are not even looking at the fact that he had a sophomore slump. I mean, I know this was his third year, but coming into this first year in 2012, he really wasn't the starter. I believe Vic was. And I know, obviously, Vic was the starter last year, but Foles got more snaps than he did the year before. So going off that, I just think there should have been more slack after this year. But I agree with you, Ryan, that if Foles is a starter and he's here next year, even if they draft Mariota and keep Foles, I do think that they should give him a one-year deal. Foles has 1 year left on his contract. So what I would do is, and what you said is, if he doesn't have a good 2015 season, dump him, even if he wins a good amount of games. So it's up in the air to see what will happen. But, Mark, you think Mariota will be drafted by the Eagles too? And you think they'll have to trade up to get him? Or do you see him going lower than people anticipate?
I kind of agree with Ryan. I think, you know, it's a match made in heaven. I think Kelly really wants him. But at the same time, I think Kelly knows that he needs a secondary more than he needs a quarterback. And that's why I think they're going to keep that pick at 20 and draft Trey Waynes.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Speaking of the Eagles, I don't know if you guys saw this. I don't think I mentioned this earlier, but this was posted on Comcast Sportsnet, CSN Philly, also the Philly Inquirer and the Daily News, actually, earlier today, that LeSean McCoy isn't open to a pay cut. He said that he's open to restructuring his contract, but not a straight cut. Quoting him, "I know how hard it is to keep a team together, and I want to be part of this team," McCoy said, "but I don't want to take less money. He's due just less than $10 million next year, and he will count $11.95 against the cap. He signed through 2017, so any restructure of his contract would likely involve kicking some guaranteed money to 2016. Only $1 million of his 2015 contract is guaranteed, but the Eagles have to take on $4.4 million in dead money to cut him loose." What do you think of that, Ryan? Do you see McCoy restructuring his contract? I understand it's a league where, you know, I don't see him as selfish. I see him, you know, he could have, I think he should restructure it a little bit. But I understand why he would want a little bit of a pay raise. He didn't have the best year this year. He had a good second half, but a lot of that was because of the injured and inferior offensive line compared to the year before. So what do you see happening with McCoy this offseason in terms of his contract, Ryan?
I think that McCoy is going to stand his ground on not wanting to take a pay raise. I'm not wanting to take a pay cut. I think he's ultimately going to end up going the way that DeSean went, DeSean Jackson. It really just seems like McCoy wants the money. I understand that he's considered one of the best running backs in the NFL. He did get a pay raise in 2012, and he is making a $9 million average salary per year. I think that's pretty solid for a running back in the NFL. I just think that he doesn't really seem to fit into Chip Kelly's locker room image anymore. I think his ego is starting to show a little bit, and any type of ego that's in there, I don't think Kelly likes, and I think Kelly wants to get rid of. He considers egos to be a cancer. It would be manageable, though, for the Eagles to get rid of him this year. He's only guaranteed $1 million in 2015, so when March 10th rolls over and the salaries become guaranteed, he'll only be guaranteed $1 million. And if they were to cut him, it'd only be a $4.4 million amount of dead money. Amount of dead money that would go on the cap.
Yeah, I could see that, too. I agree that he is egotistical. I could see them very well, especially now with Chip in charge, trading him for a good high draft pick or maybe a couple, and then you make Sproul, assuming they don't trade for another good running back or don't draft a running back in the first round, I could see Sproul's being the starter, maybe either Polk as the backup or another guy. So it should be interesting to see what happens with that. What do you think What do you think will happen with McCoy, Mark? Do you think he'll restructure?
I don't. I think he's what Ryan said. He's kind of egotistical. I see him standing his ground. And as much as I like McCoy, not as much as I think he's a top three back in the league, I wouldn't be upset to see him go. Just because you can find running backs in the draft, a dime a dozen. The right running back in the right system can produce anytime, in my opinion.
Yeah, and going back to Foles real quick before we get into our next to my next point, Foles was actually asked by the Philadelphia Inquirer and the Daily News if he expects to return as Eagles starter next year. He responded by saying, "I plan on being in Philly. Specifically, I only listen to the people at the Eagles facility in terms of where I stay. Coach GM Chip Kelly is the one that will make the decision ultimately. It's certainly notable that he wasn't unequivocal when asked if he'll be starting. I'm hoping he'll be back next year, but we'll see what happens." A couple more things. The Eagles hired Ed Marinowitz as vice president of player personnel. The January power struggle between Chip and the former position and Harry Roseman resulted in Roseman getting promoted out of personnel decisions and Kelly getting to choose a new right-hand man, which now is Marinowitz. He settles in-house on 30-year-old Marinowitz, who worked under Nick Saban at Alabama before joining the Eagles in 2012. asked what he thought of the deal. Kelly said, I can't tell you how well thought of Ed is in the scouting business. So I'll be pretty interested to see what happens with that. Also, Philly Magazine said today that it's not out of the question that Josh Huff could steal Riley Cooper's starting job in 2015. Also, Eagles wide receivers coach Bob Bicknell reportedly isn't interested in the 49ers offensive coordinator job. So we'll see what happens with that. I want to get into the stats for the football before we narrow down the last couple of minutes. Going into the stats last week, versus Indy, New England was actually very good. On third and fourth down, they were 14 for 20. And considering Indianapolis has the best passing offense in the league and is a pretty good offense overall, the Patriots only held the Colts to just over 209 total yards and four per play. And Indianapolis was just 3 for 11 on third down. So if New England can play that good, I know Indianapolis' defense is not even close to Seattle's, but carrying that over, if they can somehow be good on third down and win the turnover margin, that will definitely increase their chances. And although Wilson for Seattle in the Green Bay game had four interceptions and also a fumble, although it wasn't a turnover, I see him bouncing back, and I see Seattle having a pretty good game. For the Patriots, their center, Brian Stork, has remained limited in practice. Also, LeGarrette Blount, the running back, he denied yesterday orchestrating his November release from the Steelers. Wide receiver Brandon LaFell has been removed from the Patriots injury report previously with the shoulder and toe injuries. And it'll be interesting to see in the offseason if they'll pick up Darrell Revis's $20 million team option for next year. Patriots, it's up in the air as to whether or not that'll happen. So, also, we'll probably get into baseball next time. I would like to talk about it, but we kind of ran out of time. But we were kind of talking about this, both all of us were, at least with me with each of you, with the Phillies upcoming this year. I think you both think that the Phillies could be better than they were last year, whereas I think they'll be worse than they were last year, although not by much. Me and Ryan talked about this earlier, and I think you mentioned it too, Mark, that Cliff Lee, he's finally healthy, so he could be there too behind Hamels, assuming Hamels doesn't get traded, which I don't think will happen. I think you guys agree that although Hamels is a great pitcher, the Phillies are asking for a lot, which I don't think is a bad thing. So I see that being a pretty good 1-2 punch. And who was the number three that they got? Harang, I believe, was the number three they picked up recently. Ryan, you endorsed that move. And they also have Kendrick and Jerome Williams. And me and Mark talked about this earlier. One of the best bullpens in the league, despite how bad they were last year. Last year was mostly the offense and the starting pitching. So the bullpen, even if they trade Papelbon, who's rumored to go to Milwaukee if he waives his trade right, to go there. I see Giles as the closer, Diekman as a setup man, and maybe you pick up picking up Ryan Madsen as a setup man or just promoting somebody from a specialist to that role. So should be pretty interesting to see what happens. So next time we'll probably talk about the Super Bowl, throw in some Phillies and Eagles and some Sixers as well. So Ryan, I'm going to thank you again for joining us. I'm sure we'll enjoy seeing you on Sunday for the game, and hopefully we'll be able to talk next week following the game on Sunday. Thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
And join us next time on the Bird Gang.